Hi, everyone. Today, I have a special update. If you'll recall, on November 5th, we released an interview I did with Tammy Kim. She and her family are residents of Paradise, California. That episode aired 3 days before the campfire took off in Northern California near her home. Many of you have reached out to ask me, how's Tammy? How's her family? Did her house burn down? I, of course, had already sent her emails and voice messages and didn't hear anything back until a few days ago. Tammy did call me. She and her family are safe. I asked her if she would be willing to give all of you an update. So what follows is a rambunctious and a very enjoyable conversation with Tammy, her husband Scott, and their three daughters. Please listen along. And then at the end, I want you to feel like you could make a meaningful difference in their lives. You will discover that they need your help, need your support. You can go to the show notes where we have created a GoFundMe page just for them. GoFundMe.com/Tammy Kim Fund. That's right. Tammy Kim Fund. TammyKim Fund. Your donations, no matter how large or small, will help the Kim family rebuild the homeschool that they were just beginning to enjoy. I love this community. Thank you so much for caring about our own. Let's show the Kims that we really do care about them. So just a reminder, GoFundMe.com/Tammy Kim Fund. And now let's tune into my conversation with this rambunctious, lovely family. Welcome, Kim family, to Brave Rider. Everybody has been asking about you. Literally, we've gotten tons of emails, private messages, phone calls, worried about you because literally your episode of the podcast aired 3 days before the fires. And your mom announced that you lived in Paradise, California. So I don't know if you can feel it, but there is a huge volume of love and prayers that have been sent in your direction. So thanks for coming and sharing with us so that we can reach out and support and help you.
Thank you. And yes, we have absolutely felt those prayers and all the support that has been coming our direction and to the community of Paradise. It has absolutely been astounding.
Of course. My gosh. I mean, it's everyone. I'm looking right now. I'm on Skype with this gorgeous family, the Kim family. We have Tammy and Scott, who are the parents. And then can you just introduce your three lovely daughters?
So Julia is our 8-year-old, soon to be 9 in December. And Haley, say hi, Haley. Hi. She is our 11-year-old. And Adeline is our 13-year-old, almost 14 in December as well.
Fantastic. Thanks for being here, girls, and for everyone being here. So let's just start with your mom. Tammy, just can you give us a sense of what happened, what the experience was, and we'll let you share what the results of the fire were.
Okay, well, we woke up that morning and noticed that there was a big cloud up in the sky. And, you know, my first thought was, ooh, are we getting rain? But then I realized, a little brown for rain, right? So we just kind of thought, oh, it's probably just another fire that's happening out there somewhere, having no idea it was in our backyard, right? Wow. So interestingly, our 13-year-old eighth grader has expressed a desire to connect with the kids that are closer to her age, and we've absolutely honored that. And so we were prepared to take her to her second day of public school.
Oh my gosh.
Hard for me, but, you know, honoring that need, we hopped in the car, leaving the other two children at home. And yes, Dad's in Asia on business trip for 2 weeks. And I drove Adeline over to the school, and it was different out there, and got her to the school, dropped her off. She walked away for, you know, all of like 100 yards. And a woman pulled me over to the side of the road and said, school's been canceled. And I said, what? Oh my gosh, I just dropped my daughter off. And she said, what's her name? So she promptly hollered down Adeline, who got back in the car, and we headed back home. It was really concerning though, because at that moment, there were about 3 busloads of children that were arriving to start their school day.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were driving home and there was obviously some additional commotion that just was not normal. And I did start to have a real strong feeling I needed to hurry home. So upon getting to our street, that urgency just increased and I hightailed it into our neighborhood, flew into the yard and got into the house and grabbed the children, grabbed the cat without a box, and thought to grab the computer because we do have family portraits and those kinds of things on it. So got out of there and didn't look back, I should say. So wow. It was a parking lot for a good hour and a half trying to get just onto the main road to be able to head out of town.
What happened was I was supposed to be in China this week. Because I was in Asia for 2 weeks. I was in Korea and Singapore, and I got all this text at 2 a.m. in Singapore saying, "Is your family okay? The house, the town is on fire." And I'm like, "The town is on fire? What?" So I FaceTimed her, and they're out the door, and they're showing me the raging fires just consuming our town on FaceTime while they're trying to get out. And I was like, it wasn't even like processing my head, but I was grateful that they got out.
Right.
And then obviously I got the first flight out of Singapore back to California just to, you know, take care of everything, you know? Wow.
And so tell us, how's your house?
Who wants to tell Julie what the house looks like?
I think this one should do the honors.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Daddy, you want to tell?
It's in complete rubble. I would text you the picture of the house. We already have picture confirmation that the house has been destroyed. We have a friend that works for the local utility that he was able to go on premise. Because right now, they're not letting anyone into Paradise yet. The fire is still raging, as you could tell.
Yes.
And I think it's 35% contained so far.
Wow.
Just to let you know, just based on my understanding and speaking with the first responders, Paradise is a town of 27,000 to 30,000 people. So it's a fairly big town, but it's a very country town.
Yeah.
Reason why my wife got out fairly early, she got out around 9 a.m. And as she said, it was a parking lot just to get out. And there's only two main veins leaving out of the city. So as you could tell, it was very difficult to get out. And there was a fire. Fires were engulfing all around the roads. So like my wife got out with fire going on the roads. So in that regard, and the fire was so fast and furious that one of the reasons why there were kids going to school was the evacuation alert didn't happen till later in the day because it was just so fast and furious and chaotic. I mean, no fault to the infrastructure, whatever. This is just crazy. The fire just went so fast that, you know, no one could get any rhyme or reason around it. So
no, well, I'm a Californian by birth, and that's the problem with fire. It's not like a hurricane where it's this slow moving, you can predict it and make projections. The winds can change the course of a fire in a moment, in a heartbeat. And if it really takes off, if it's a very dry condition, it just takes over. They said down in the Woolsey fire, it actually leapt over the 101. That's 8 lanes of traffic. You would think that wouldn't even be possible. So I can only imagine in a wooded area how quickly that fire really grabbed hold. So your house is down to cinders. It was incinerated. Is that what you're saying? It's not like you go back and pick through the rubble.
That is correct. And I'll text you the pictures of our house if you want to put it on the podcast.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned the wind conditions. That was exactly what we were up against. Very dry because we had not had any rain, or haven't yet, but very, very windy. So we've got flames that are blowing. And then we had embers that were kind of falling out of the sky. It was like snowing. And so that was starting smaller fires throughout the whole community. And there were no firefighters to go and put those out because they were working on the big one.
Sure, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about your relationship to Paradise. How long had you lived in this town?
10 months.
Well, not even that, love. First of all, I was born and raised in Paradise. And then, of course, took off for college and we started our family elsewhere and then had a desire to get closer to grandma and grandpa, who are still in Paradise or were. Their home has also burned to the ground.
Wow.
So that said, we moved back in March to Paradise. And so we've literally been in Paradise for not even 8 months.
Wow. And so are these your parents or your grandparents?
My parents.
Your parents. Yeah. So was this the house you grew up in?
It is.
So you've lost two hugely significant homes in your life at the same time.
Interestingly, my grandmother, who is the mother of my mom, her house went down in smoke as well. And my sister happened to be living in that home. So yeah.
Wow. So is it literally just everyone you know is in your situation? Is that how it feels?
Pretty much. There are a few families in the town whose homes did not go down. So that is also, it presents a whole different scenario where they need to determine what they're going to do. And, you know, there's the option for all of us of trying to rebuild. Of course, we have to pay off mortgages and then what would be left for rebuilding. There's a lot of different things that we need to be deciding. So since speaking with you last, we have secured an apartment that we are going to temporarily live in for, it could be 6 months, it could be 2 years. So until we're able to determine what we're going to do and where we're going to go next. So
that makes sense. But you're really starting from scratch. I mean, you guys left with the clothes on your backs. Would any of you girls want to share what it feels like to lose everything? How have you dealt with it? Are you still in the adrenaline of escape or is it starting to settle in that, oh, wait, I wish I had X and now I don't have it?
It wasn't really sad because we didn't actually really like the house.
We were going to remodel it. So we were anticipating that. Thank goodness that never happened. Because.
Yes. What about personal possessions? Do you have anything that was important to you that you lost?
The piano. Well, there's mom's piano.
Oh, so. Wow.
Don't be shy. Talk.
I don't know. I'm trying to.
I lost my iPod.
These are big. Those are the big things. I remember when I was about 5 years old, we were about to be evacuated for a fire. I lived in Canoga Park, which is in the San Fernando Valley in Southern California. And my parents pulled the car out and pointed it towards the road and it was filled with whatever they thought was important to take with them. And I got up out of my bed, very worried at about 11 p.m. And I came to my mom and I said, can I bring my pillow? Like to me, that was like the one sacred possession I did not want to be without. And then the wind shifted and it went the other way. So we didn't have to evacuate, but my goodness, it's a lot to lose.
So Haley, you lost your iPad. You missed the piano.
Yeah.
And we're missing some new friends that we started to make.
I mean, okay. If the computer burned in the fire, I would probably be a loss because Fort and I would be gone.
Well, it's
edit that.
it's interesting because we actually had a conversation, a month ago, where if there was some major disaster, what's the first thing we'd take? And I told my wife the first thing we need to take is the computer because that's where all our photos and all that memory, memories of our families there, and she did exactly what she needed to do is take the computer.
Yeah. So Scott, tell us, how quickly did you hop on a plane to come home? I mean, what happened over in Singapore?
First of all, I work for a great company. I'm not plugging them. Their name is Gartner. They're based out of Stamford, Connecticut. It's a technology advisory firm. The first thing I told them was, hey, originally it was a 2-week Asia trip. And I said, hey, I'm still going to honor, still haven't processed it. And maybe this is dumb for me to think, but I told my boss, hey, I'll be happy to finish out the work here because, they flew me out there. It's thousands of dollars for the company to be out there. And my boss was so great. He just said, no, you need to go back to your family. Just jump on the plane. So literally, the company did such a great job. Of 6 hours later, they got me a flight It was a little bit Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I had to go from Singapore to Hong Kong to San Francisco to Sacramento and back, but they got me back. And I think I got back, what, midnight?
Friday.
My days were so screwed up that I got back. I immediately tried to get back as soon as I could. And I'm just grateful that my family's safe. I didn't care about the house, about the stuff, whatever. I was just grateful that my family was safe, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, that was our primary concern too. Too many people who got trapped in the fire, and I was immediately relieved to think that you guys were all together. So that is fantastic. What we want to do for you is raise some money. So we're going to invite our audience to go to a GoFundMe page. It will be on the show notes, and hopefully we can help you replace whatever, maybe the piano. I don't know what what they will contribute, but obviously a homeschooling family starting from scratch, there are a lot of needs, and we are so grateful that you would take the time to share with us about your story. I know it's a scary one, and I thank you for opening your story to us. Is there anything else you would like us to know about homeschooling in paradise or other families or anything else that you'd like us to know?
You know, in talking with you, Julie, I did reach out to our homeschool charter and talked with our support teacher, and she was very grateful and said that she will definitely bring up the things that you and I discussed. But she said at this point, truly everyone is just in major crisis mode and
yes,
not even thinking about homeschool, though, you know, we've been able to kind of, you know, move forward and try and establish some kind of normalcy. We're really excited that we've established an apartment to rent. And so that means that something's ahead and that we're getting established. I think that we'll probably need to transfer our charter to the area where we're now living, because it's a good hour and 40 minutes to where our hometown is. So yeah, it's a major transition. So we just, you know, we move forward and just count the blessings that we have. You know, the hotel that we were sent to by our insurance, they opened up to the community. There were a lot of people that were wanting to bring donations, clothes, toiletries, those kinds of things. And so the hotel that we're staying at said, go ahead, bring them here. What they didn't realize was the overwhelming response that would happen. And the lobby is completely, or was completely inundated with just tons of clothes and everything you can imagine, food. So we kind of picked through it and thought, oh, we don't really need this, you know, but there's a lot of people in Chico that could really use this. So Scott actually called our religious pastor, our bishop, and said, hey, you have any ideas on what we could do to get this stuff up there? Well, long story short, it turned into lots of people loading up trucks. We had two U-Hauls to get all that stuff up to Chico. And so we also benefited because we got to kind of go through and get some of the clothing. And I mean, everything that we're wearing right now is through donations. See, look, I'm really stylish. Actually,
this is from Target.
This is from Target. Oh, this is from Target. Okay.
These are my
favorite.
Okay.
So,
these donations.
Very nice. So cute. So cute.
But yeah, you'll see that I texted the pictures of like the evacuation center in Chico. That
awesome.
U-Haul. I mean, tremendous service by people. It shows the great humanity of people during these times. And likewise with the Brave Right family, we're so gracious. I mean, we're humbled for you guys to do something for us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you are so welcome. People want to way to share in the suffering and to make a difference. And so you are the face of that for us, and we really value you. So thank you very much. And good luck in the rebuild. Keep us in your sort of news reel. I don't necessarily need to be your first person you contact. You've got a lot of people in your life. But as you make progress, let us know and we'll give an update. Okay. Losing an entire town is so much more dramatic than even just losing your home. And I know there's a readjustment ahead. So any way we can help you, we want to be a part of that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. What do you girls say to Julie?
Thank you.
You're
giving us books to read.
Books to read.
Well, as soon as you have an address, let me know, okay? And very happy to have met each of your girls, too. And you, Scott, thank you for sharing your family with us.
Thanks,
thank
Julie.
You very much. Have a great day.
Bye.
I wonder if you're like me. I can't go anywhere without my phone. In fact, I'll be flying down the road up to the stop sign near my house, and I'll suddenly have that feeling like my third arm is missing. And I start hunting around my purse, and if my phone isn't in my purse, I hightail it back to the house. We are so connected today to our technological tools. Many of us use them in our jobs. We've got a laptop. We've got an iPad. We use the television. We have a phone. And our kids see us using all that technology. And then you know what they do? They want at it. They want to do the exact same things. Only the difference is their work is play. They're going to open the laptop or the iPad and they're going to play Minecraft or some other game that draws their fascination and challenges them. Unfortunately for us, we tend to see that play as mere entertainment. We can't understand that same feeling where they wake up and their third arm is waiting for them to jump on and answer a question or beat the level or build another world. Today's episode is going to look at this conundrum that Lindsay McCarthy shares with us. She and her husband work on computers, and their kids see them on those computers, and they want access too. How do we create a family culture that values what technology offers without allowing it to take over? Stay tuned today for our discussion of technology and homeschooling. I'm Julie Bogart. You're listening to the Brave Writer Podcast. Welcome to another episode of Ask Julie. Today, I get to chat with Lindsay McCarthy, a homeschooling mother to her 9-year-old son, Tyler, and her 5-year-old daughter, Ember. Lindsay and husband, Mike, and their family split their time between Westchester, Pennsylvania, and Silverthorne, Colorado. Her whole family loves to travel as often as possible, and I'm totally jealous of all the places they go. Just last year, they visited the Grand Tetons in Yellowstone National Park, and they even trekked all the way to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to experience the total solar eclipse. Lindsay also runs a Facebook community called The Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. When Lindsay applied to be on this podcast, she had a concern that so many of you share. She wrote the following: "One of my biggest struggles is how to help my kids love to read when they are bombarded with easier forms of entertainment and fact-finding due to technology." Technology, that beast that we're all trying to tame. That's the big kahuna. Welcome, Lindsay, to our podcast.
Hi, Julie. Thanks so much for having me.
So great to have you. So tell me a little bit about that. What is the vexing problem you have in your homeschool today?
Yeah, I mean, it's just what you said, the technology beast. You know, my husband and I both work from home. We work on our computers. So our kids see us on technology a lot, and they also want to be on their tech and can't really distinguish the difference between, you know, them looking up information on YouTube for entertainment purposes and what mom and dad do, you know, creating content on their computers.
So tell me a little bit more about that. What are the kinds of YouTube videos that attract them?
They do watch a lot of educational ones. Tyler loves science, so he's gotten really into these Mystery Dog videos, which I'm all for technology. Like, it's a great tool. But I'm just trying to find, you know, that happy balance of, you know, we still enjoy reading and being outside and all these other things. So where do we draw the line?
Yes, the line, that very important line that we're all trying to find. I know in my family that, you know, I went through iterations of trying to understand how to manage technology. Of course, my kids grew up before the internet when they were little. And about the time that my son Noah turned 8 or 9, the internet was born. And suddenly video gaming and online gaming and eventually MySpace and LiveJournal and all of these options for becoming active socially and through YouTube were staring us in the face. And we tried many methods to understand the role of technology in our lives, whether it was limiting it or not limiting it. What are some of the strategies that you've tried to sort of create a relationship with technology in your family?
Yeah, well, something we've been pretty intentional about is defining our family's values. And in our family, we value creativity, we value words, we value reading, meditation, mindfulness, and serving other people. And we actually created a morning ritual with the help of our friend Hal Elrod that's called the Miracle Morning. As part of that, nobody in our household is allowed any tech until they're finished with their Miracle Morning. So that's kind of been our main strategy. But once that's done, it's kind of a free-for-all.
Well, give me an example of what the elements are of your Miracle Morning so we can just get a sense of what it is and why it's valuable to your family.
Yeah, so it follows an acronym called CHARMS, which stands for Creativity, Health, Affirmations, Reading, Meditation, and Service. So those are the things we do first thing in the morning. So literally when I wake up, I meditate, I read something, I write in my journal, I say my affirmations, I have a vision board that I look at. And then when I get up, we eat a healthy breakfast, and then the kids and I will exercise together, and then I kind of help them go through their charms.
How do they like it? Is this something they enjoy?
It is. It's something they enjoy. And a lot of mornings, they'll kind of get lost in that creative process, and you know, they kind of forget about technology for a while. And it's as soon as they're done, though, like they start to get bored with that, then they're like, oh, now I need tech.
So tell me a little about the habit that is technology in your life. Have you ever measured how many hours a day you're online?
No, that's a great question, Julie. And I don't know that I've ever intentionally measured that.
Well, I'm ahead of myself, but we're going to talk more about that later in this podcast. So if you just were to make a guesstimate, would you say that you go online only after your Miracle Morning? Do you ever look at your phone before you get out of bed? Do you ever look at your phone when you're talking to somebody else on the phone? Like maybe, you know, you're talking to someone on your phone and you've got your laptop open at the same time. Do you ever use technology in ways that you might naturally frown on?
Yes, I definitely do that.
Now, you mentioned that one of the things you would love your kids to be is readers, and you're worried that they're reading mostly online and not so much books. Tell me how much reading you do in books compared to how much you do online.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I do my Miracle Morning when they're still asleep. So okay. They don't actually see me reading.
Oh, they
physical
don't.
Physical books.
Okay. So there isn't like a time during the day where you'll pull out a novel that you're reading and sit in a chair and read?
We listen to audiobooks in the car a lot.
Okay.
And that's how our family kind of gets the same story at the same time. And we read at bedtime every night.
Oh, that's beautiful. Love that. That's beautiful. In fact, my mom had a rule for me growing up that worked really well. She said we were allowed to stay up as late as we wanted in our bedrooms as long as we were reading. And so I really became a bedtime reader. I would often wake up at like 3 a.m. with the light still on and the book across my chest, you know, because I was reading till that last possible moment. But all three of the kids in our family really loved reading because we had so much permission to do it. So I love reading at bedtime. I think reading to children at bedtime is absolutely vital and valuable. So let's get back then to this notion that you brought up. You want them to be readers. You don't want them only reading online. And yet they don't see you reading. And I'm guessing that what you're saying is you don't pull out a book during the day to read. Is that true? Like a physical printed book? That doesn't happen very often?
Well, we have started practicing poetry tea times. We do that once a month.
Nice.
So that is kind of the one time a month that they see me pull out a physical book and read to them and with them, other than bedtime reading. But now Tyler's independent with his bedtime reading, so.
Which is wonderful. So here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing, tell me if I have this right. I'm hearing you have a value that I don't know yet where it comes from, but you have a value around a physical printed book as being superior to reading online or even listening to audiobooks, even though you value that. But it isn't actually your personal practice. Would that be accurate?
It is my personal practice, but not in front of my children.
Okay, so
that makes sense.
That does make sense. So what are you reading during your miracle morning? Are you reading a novel? What are you reading?
It's actually a magazine. It's called Science of Mind, and they have these little daily snippets that are really quick and easy to read, and then I journal off of those.
Okay, so you're reading some kind of spiritual inspirational literature in the mornings on a daily basis, which is wonderful. So many people benefit from that. I think it's a wonderful start to the day practice. I even wrote the Gracious Space books with that in mind, something to digest that's simple and short and helps you set your mindset or, you know, your frame of mind for the day. So that's beautiful. So now let's circle back to this notion that you want your children to have not only technology as the source of their reading life. What I'm hoping that you're gathering from our exploration initially is that you are conducting as an adult a rich, vibrant life that includes attention to these amazing travel experiences, nature experiences, that has a spiritual component to it, that is intentional about affirmations, about creativity, about getting outside, exercise and health, good healthy food. And yet you are feeling anxious still about the role of technology in your children's lives. And the cure for it, which might be reading, isn't even a natural practice for you in your daily life. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, that's totally fair.
All right. So let's now demystify the romantic notion around a physical book because this is just nostalgia for the past. I'm not saying that we shouldn't read books. We can read them on Kindles. We can read them on Gutenberg Press online. We can listen to them as audiobooks, or we can hold a physical book. There is benefit to holding a physical book. There's something about being able to page ahead, page back. The brain holds onto content based on where it shows up 2/3 of the way through the book on the left-hand side, second paragraph down. It encodes the book in a way that Kindle, sometimes it's challenging. You can't remember where you saw that phrase. You don't know how to get back to it. So there is value to it, but it isn't the kind of value that we sometimes are assigning, which is that somehow the technology piece is the danger. And if we were off technology, we would be learning something more valuable. So first, let's just strip away the delivery system. Reading matters, but reading today comes in so many more formats and opportunities than when you and I were growing up before the internet. And so first, I would love it if you could start quantifying how much reading your kids are doing during the day. Reading that has nothing to do with books or reading that has to do with books. So you've got a son who's reading on his own at bedtime. You've got two kids that you are reading to every night. So those are coming through books, poetry, tea time once a month. But what other reading are they doing? Let's start to make a list. Start observing and noticing. You know, take a month to just jot down, oh, he had to read a search engine to find that YouTube video that he wanted. He read all the comments. He read the discussion over on this one page that led him to watching this other movie. Start paying attention to where reading's showing up. Reading instructions for how to use something. Reading the shopping list back to you while you're in the grocery store. Where else is reading showing up in your child's life? You might be surprised that there is more going on than you had currently valued. So that would be one of my first suggestions. How does that feel to think about?
I like that. I'm a big believer of, you know, what you track is what shows up in your life. So,
yes. And I think one of the dangers with homeschooling is that we are conditioned to romanticize the past. There is something very one-room schoolhouse about home education and this feeling of nostalgia for a simpler time. Of course, the times in the past were not simpler. They didn't even have dryers, you know? So, yeah, they didn't have washing machines. They were like hand washing clothes. I'm promising you, it was not simpler. What we have today is this onslaught of options and opportunities. And sometimes we devalue them because they don't match this sort of idyllic, natural lifestyle that we associate with the past. But it's also the terror of children being exposed to things that we aren't sure we want them to know about yet. So that combination sort of seizes us up. So if we can start by actually valuing what is showing up in the space in their current lives, we can lower our anxiety around the unknowing. We can start to see, oh, my child is learning to read. My child values reading. They use it as a tool in all these ways that I hadn't fully accounted for. The second thing that I want to ask you is, when your child or children find something on YouTube they want to watch, what usually happens? Are you a part of that experience? Do they do it alone in a bedroom? Is it a shared experience where they watch it and then they invite you in? What's that like in the family dynamic?
Yeah. So they're not allowed to like go in a separate room to watch it. So we're all usually in the living room, but everybody's kind of on their own device. So tech time, they get 2 hours a day, and that's really so I can get some of my work done. So it's basically a tech babysitter so that I can get something done.
Well, that is so honest. And not necessarily inappropriate either. I understand the need for time and space. When I was working as a freelance writer and ghostwriter and editor, I used to hire a sort of a mother's helper. I had a 13-year-old come to my house and play with the kids for 2 hours or 3 hours while I worked on my computer. There is a need if you have hustle on the side to make sure that your kids are happy and safe and entertained. And playing Minecraft or watching YouTube videos is not an unreasonable way to make that happen. That is certainly valuable. One of the dangers that I would submit to you is if they only associate it with time when you are not with them. Then I think the technology becomes a forbidden fruit. It's only used as a babysitter. What would happen if after that 2 hour time period was up, you rejoined them and said, I want to see your favorite video that you looked up. I want to watch it with you. Have you done that with them? Have you valued what they did in your absence by joining it afterwards?
I have not.
Do you think that's something you could try?
Yeah, I love that idea, actually.
One of the things that makes something scary in families is when it seems invisible to us. So if our children are on technology, the conversations they're having with the screen are happening inside their heads, and we don't know what those conversations are. So we're more likely to value a board game that we see happening out in front of us because we can hear them discussing the rules, rolling the dice, having a conversation with a sibling, getting in a fight, you know, we can sort of be a part of that experience and monitor it and support it and help it. But when they're facing a screen, it's like they exit the world of community and they go into this private place that can be both wonderful for them or scary for us. So one way to eliminate the scary side of technology is to be a joiner. You know, show me what you just watched. Teach me how to build a world in Minecraft. I want to play you in Wii Bowling. You know, joining, becoming a participant, putting your child in what I call the driver's seat, letting them teach you, show you, invite you in to their superior experience, the thing they're an expert at that you don't know.
I love that.
Wonderful. Good. So far we've got make a little list, pay attention, observe all the places that they're reading. Start to value those. Be alert to what they are. The second thing is let's join them in their technology and not leave them isolated. Not assume that it's a privilege or a prize to be won or a distraction when mom's busy, but it is actually a constitutive part of their development as learners. You know, a lot of times, we ask our kids to love learning, but we aren't a fan of the thing they love to learn. So here we have an opportunity to join them, to recognize that they are being intrinsically motivated to seek out learning opportunities for themselves online. And then we get to join them and allow them to show us, to show off what they're learning, which is a powerful experience for kids. You know, sometimes children will stumble across a YouTube website for origami or slime or how to bake muffins. And here they are actually curious and interested, but they don't have a parent who's available to shop for the resources, to sit down with them and help them do the origami. So what they become is spectators of somebody else's active life. And what we want to do is allow them not just to be a spectator, but then to turn it around and have that exciting experience become their own. Here's how I know you're the right kind of parent for this. You literally took your family to see the total solar eclipse in Jackson Hole. You did not want to watch it on television. You wanted to be there in person, living under the sky with this community of people. So now let's treat the YouTube technology that they're using the same way. Find out what it is they're doing, what they're interested in. You know, if they're building Minecraft worlds, become interested in Minecraft. And then even, you know, do diagrams, talk about it, record what they're learning, write it down, put it in a notebook. One of the most exciting experiences I had with Liam when he was struggling with dysgraphia between the ages of 9 and 12 is we decided to make a notebook that was a map of imaginary islands. He was so good at maps because he loved online gaming. And it occurred to me that if he couldn't handwrite the alphabet, maybe he could practice using a pencil by drawing maps. And weirdly, it worked because there was no pressure to be accurate. So what we would do is we would sit, look at a sheet of paper, and I'd say, draw an imaginary island. I taught him how to symbolize mountains, the ocean, high elevation, low elevation. We created little map keys. He included military, weapons, superpowers, flags, a motto for each island. It took us about a year to do 8 or 9 islands, and some of it he handwrote, some of it I jotted down for him. But it was building off of his online gaming life rather than ignoring it, denying it, and treating it like it was just entertainment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, Tyler is really into Minecraft, and I've kind of let him run with that, but I would put it in a box for him and say, that's your thing, Ty. And, you know, I've taken him to Minecraft conferences, and I tried to learn, and he's like, Mom, you're hopeless. you don't get it. So like, I've tried to step into his world a little bit, and you know, I feel like I let him run with it to a degree, but I'm not a full participant in it with him. And actually, that's how he learned to read. Is he was so interested in Minecraft that I bought him all these Minecraft books, and I said, buddy, I don't have the time to learn it and teach you. So here's all these resources for you. Go ahead. And he did. He taught himself how to play Minecraft and to read because he was so interested in it.
So that's a fabulous example of you partnering with your child, though. I would say that you were a meaningful partner by purchasing those books, taking him to conferences. You don't have to become a skilled Minecraft player to value the way that Minecraft shows up in his life. You are doing that. What I invite you to consider now is not seeing it as a treat, but seeing it as a constitutive part of his life. His work in Minecraft is every bit as real as your work for whatever your online business is. It's the same thing. He's a child, so it's going to be Minecraft. He's not going to be developing a blog where he invites fellow kids at his age. However, it certainly may become that. You just never know. I know children who actually record themselves building and playing games, and they have their own YouTube channels, and they share that with the world at whatever age that becomes meaningful to them. So one of the things we want to just stay interested in is how the passion a child has shows up in their lives and leads them into all kinds of learning. And I think you're on a great track. What you want to do now is just let go and embrace it. Be interested. The other way that we support our kids in interests that maybe aren't ours. So for instance, I had a daughter who was very motivated to get interested in fashion. So I did what you did. I ordered her all the subscriptions to Elle, W, Vogue, you know, the different sort of high fashion magazines that I knew she would love to read. We went to Chicago's Miracle Mile and we looked at all the stores. And then she started a blog and she taught herself how to use HTML. This is back, you know, before we had push button publishing. She was doing just a fantastic job of this. But one of the things that I wasn't good at really was shopping with her for clothes. So she found an older student, a student of ours from college, who was a friend of the family, to go with her. And they shopped at thrift stores every week. She learned all about fashion blogging online. I didn't have to become an expert in fashion. I just was able to supply her with resources to come alongside. We built spelling lists from fashion magazines. That was the way that we were able to train her into the expertise she needed. So one of the ways is supplying resources, research, transportation, money. These are the ways parents support interests. But what you can do for yourself on the back end that your kids don't know about is writing down what they're getting out of it. Translating all that activity, interest, and energy into the educational language that reassures you the kind of learning you want your kids to have is actually happening. So as you're looking at this Minecraft lifestyle of your child, seeing it as a friend of learning rather than as entertainment for after they're done learning. It's the same thing. And as you're considering now how to incorporate technology into your family life, I invite you to consider a third thing, how you talk about it. And I know because you're an affirmation person and a language person that this will resonate with you. If technology is seen through the lens of something that needs to be controlled and managed, and as a reward and entertainment, it becomes ice cream. It becomes this thing that we only get if we've been good or a special occasion occurs or if mom isn't home, you know, it becomes this thing that we have to manipulate people to get instead of it being the tool and resource that is a complement to the lifestyle you're already leading. So when I asked you to think about how many ways you use technology, how frequently it shows up in your own life, we want to make space for that in our kids' lives while also offering them the buffet of other ideas and options so that it isn't the only satisfying treat in life.
Yeah, I like that idea too. I mean, we've had conversations with them that technology is this wonderful tool and, you know, we need to treat it with respect and that there's also this whole wide world out there. That's why we do so much travel and have all these wonderful experiences planned for them, because we want them to see the world, not just see it through a screen.
Absolutely. And I think if you see the screen and the real world in dialogue with each other, you're going to be pleasantly surprised at how much you are making that life possible for your kids. It's clear to me just from reading your background and the intentionality with which you parent, that that is their life. What may be uncomfortable, what may be challenging to sort of take in, is that technology is not only here to stay, but adults rely on it 10 to 12 hours a day, every day. That is the world we live in. The phone is a second brain for most adults. So what we really want is for our kids not only to have respect for technology, but to know that they're in this dialogical tension, that they are out in the world and they are also on their phones or on their devices. One of the great opportunities that you have, I think, is to be a part of their technological lives and build from that. So if they're watching a YouTube video that's very silly about, let's say, you know, a series of books that they're reading, challenging them, supporting them to make a similar video or to do the activity in their family, in your family. One of the things we do in Brave Writer with our Arrow and Boomerang literature guides is we include book club party ideas to go with enjoying those books so that kids are invited to bring family and friends together, build activities, learn how to host a party, experience and explore the book using crafts, art, food, entertainment that is of the human community kind. You don't need to do that 6 hours a day. But if you do those kinds of experiences once a month, once a quarter, you start to build a craving for more of those experiences. Too often, what we do with our kids is we say, please don't get on technology, but they don't have a meaningful vision that is a stimulating alternative. So part of what our job as parents is to create that for them, even if it's just a once a month experience.
Yeah, Tyler and Ember actually had a Harry Potter themed birthday party this year, and it was really fun.
So
they played Quidditch in the backyard, and yeah.
I think you know how to do this. I actually think you're probably doing a really good job of it. And there's anxiety, partly because of their ages, about what amount of screen time is too much. So maybe instead of quantifying number of hours, pay attention to the level of engagement with their own lives that you see manifesting in your children. One of the tools of enchanting an education that works well for younger kids is surprise. So you may consider surprising your kids once a week, once every 2 weeks, where you supply something they didn't expect. Send your kids to bed. Put out on the coffee table something to be discovered. Art supplies, a deck of cards, a brand new tabletop game, dress-up clothes, binoculars, you know, Chinese checkers, pickup sticks, jacks, something that you, sort of in your nostalgia for a simpler time, would love to see your children do. Leave it available. Don't comment on it. Let them discover it by themselves in the morning. Tyler or Ember may say to you, Mommy, what does this say? I don't know. Why don't you take a look and see? And allow them to discover it and then involve yourself over time. Let them discover new practices, playthings, opportunities that will surprise them. Video is endlessly surprising. It's one of the reasons they're always drawn to the computer screen. So if you want to complement that experience, think of ways to show up that are surprising for your kids.
That's a great idea. Ember loves to watch those videos where it's like someone opening a toy.
Yes.
And I'm always so intrigued. I'm like, why is that so fascinating to her? Like, wouldn't she rather open her own toy? But that's what you're saying. Surprise them. Let them have that experience of opening something new. You know, just put a bag on the table and what's in the bag?
Like, absolutely.
Brilliant.
Absolutely. And, you know, the things that can be in the bag can be so different than even, you know, some plastic toy. It could be a collection of nature items and a card with a big question mark. And you could even use technology to say, let's go on a scavenger hunt online to see if we can find out the Latin name for each of these nature items. You could start to showcase the use of technology, even around the things that are natural, that are real, that you want them to know. So think about the dialogue between technology and real life, and help them have those experiences. Maybe you even film them unboxing something and share it, you know, in with their dad that day. Start to see it not as this taboo that you're only allowing them to have after they've done their fitness work. See it in dialogue and start to expand their experience of the world. You know, as we go into the, you know, summer months, and I know we'll be airing this podcast in the fall, but as I think of you going into your summer months, there are so many backyard games that are perfect for this kind of unboxing experience, whether it's badminton or croquet or lawn bowling, you know, things, you know, a slip and slide, one of those fun things you put on the end of the hose that makes the water squirt around. There are ways to invite them out of the house, away from the screen, that will feel like an adventure to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something they love to do is create obstacle courses. So sometimes I'll just like put a bunch of stuff out in the living room and say, what can you make with this? And, you know, create an obstacle course for your fitness today. And
I love that idea. What a fun thing to do for kids. That's exactly right. Or treasure hunts, you know, they have to solve clues for your five-year-old. Each of the clues could just be a hand-drawn sketch for where the next clue is. And at the end of it, there's something fun for them to do that's new. Those are, you know, pre-literacy skills, actually. So that might be fun. You could put the first letter of the word, you know, so let's say you start in their bedroom and the first clue is that the next clue will be behind the sofa. So you put a great big S and you draw a picture of the sofa. And then they get behind the sofa and they pick up the next clue and it's got a great big M on it and a picture of the bathroom mirror, you know, like that. Help them discover the joy and mystery and surprise of early childhood. And you'll see them start to think of doing those things for each other as well.
Yeah, I love that. All these ideas are great.
Fantastic. Do you have any questions for me? Anything that didn't work or that you are worried about as we come to the close of this conversation?
Yeah, I think what I'm realizing more and more is the way I talk about it. I'm always kind of negative around technology. And I don't have to be. Like, I remember Tyler was really into Pokemon Go for a while. And it's literally how we would get him out of the house. We're like, hey, Tyler, do you want to go on a Poke hunt? And he's like, yeah. And we would, you know, he was getting exercise using Pokemon Go because he couldn't wait to get to the next area. And we took these long hikes playing Pokemon Go. And I don't know why I kind of steered away from that and became so negative around technology. So,
well, it's a worthwhile thought experiment for you. Maybe free write about it. You know, sometimes what I notice happens for me is I will be comfortable for a while in choices I make for my family. And then a subtle change will occur. A best friend says something that makes me feel ashamed of a choice I made. Or I read an article online that suddenly casts doubts over a practice that I've felt good about. And I will notice that because I want to be a conscientious person, I will suddenly render judgment on a practice that was going just fine in my family. It takes a lot of courage to pay more attention to the health of your own kids than to the prevailing belief system that is being batted around you. And in terms of Pokemon Go, one of the great tools that a lot of families have used to help their family go on hikes is geocaching, which predates even the internet. And none of us
loves geocaching.
Yes, exactly. Because here's the thing, it is capitalizing on the properties of surprise, mystery, risk, and adventure. That's why the internet and gaming is so popular with children. It taps into the four elements of enchantment: surprise, mystery, risk, and adventure. If you want non-technology to show up as attractive to children, add surprise, mystery, risk, and adventure to their regular lives. Borrow what you're learning from their attachment to technology, and you will see them blossom.
Awesome.
Thank you so much,
Julie.
Oh, thank you. No, this is such a perfect question, and I appreciate you sharing about Miracle Morning. If somebody were interested in that community, where would they go?
Yeah, Facebook is the best place. I run a group by the same name, the Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. I'm literally in there every day. So
fantastic. Well, that is wonderful. And we will include that in the show notes. We will contact you again in the fall and see if any of these changes are valuable and helpful, and hear how Tyler and Ember are doing.
Yeah, I have pages of notes. So this is great.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing your story with us, Lindsay.
Thank you so much, Julie.
Let's give Lindsay a few moments to apply those strategies. We'll return to her in just a minute. I promised you that I would read you a quote from my new book, The Brave Learner: Finding Everyday Magic in Homeschool, Learning, and Life, each episode of this season of the podcast. So let's hear a little bit about technology, shall we? Why are adults more interested in taking the stairs at work because a watch keeps track of the steps than simply because it helps us avoid heart attacks? The right reason is too abstract for the daily commitment. Death seems far away, but a bright, completed circle on my wrist is immediately satisfying. This quote comes from the chapter called Applying the Superpowers. And you know, if you, as an adult, find the motivation to exercise, for instance, just because of a Fitbit, imagine how you might be able to adopt that same strategy when you are working with your kids on their schoolwork. I help you know how to do that in the book. If you're interested in pre-ordering, go to thebravelearner.com and you'll see all the booksellers linked directly from that page. We also offer you a free downloadable excerpt. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the podcast. I'm ready to find out what happened when Lindsay took some of our ideas and applied them to her family. Let's get back to it. Hey, Lindsay, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me today, Julie.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your amazing questions and the issues that you faced, because I know things related to tech and how we help our kids have meaningful experiences at home is central to so many parents' questions about raising children and homeschooling. So I feel like you raised just such a valuable question that many of our parents are relating to right now. So I am excited to hear what happened since we last spoke. For instance, tell me a little bit about your relationship now to technology and how you see it for yourself and for your kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be an ongoing struggle, honestly, but I've changed my mindset around it a lot. And I know last time we talked about, you know, kind of, it doesn't matter the delivery system. So, you know, I was a little nostalgic for a real book. And I actually did incorporate that more into our lives instead of listening to an audiobook together, especially in the summertime. You know, on those lazy afternoons, we would curl up all together and read an actual real book.
How nice. So nice.
And we planned a trip to Japan. So in order to kind of prepare for Japan, we watched a couple of documentaries together, and we also read some physical books together. And I think that was really helpful for the kids to kind of see what it was going to be like before we went there.
Oh my goodness, so true. One of the things that research has shown is that
It's the second encounter with almost anything that creates the strongest lasting bond. When we are hearing or seeing or doing something for the very first time, our whole sensory system is overloaded. We are processing and simultaneously responding because we don't know what's coming. So a little bit of that fight or flight kicks in, but also the adrenaline rush of the new. But by establishing a connection and then having a second encounter, that second encounter is filled with anticipation because there's a certain part of the experience that's already familiar to you and you can look forward to it. You can be prepared for an emotion that you'll have. It's sort of like when you hear a brand new song on the radio, you can't sing along yet. You might really like it, but it's once you've learned the hook that you feel like this is a really great song. And that's a little bit what happens when you show a documentary and then visit a place. You're giving first an experience, a taste of what it might be. You're reading about it, deepening that awareness that this other thing exists. But then when you go there, well, now you're in the encounter experience where your systems are overloaded on every level. But because you've prepared for it, you aren't just in shock. You're able to sort of parse it and appreciate it. Tell me a little bit about that Japan trip. How did it go?
It was amazing. And because we had a little bit of the history beforehand, when we were there, we got to really dive in deep when we visited like the castles and the gardens and the temples and the shrines. And the kids had a little context for. And then they got to have an experience too, where our guide showed us like, this is how the Shintos, you know, do the blessing on their hand with the water before they pray at the temple. And I think it made it even more memorable for them because they had a little bit beforehand to really grasp onto when they were there.
Perfect. Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I love hearing that. And then that way, you also create the greatest opportunity for them to make that connection when they have context. You know, context is everything. It's what we need for good relationships. It's why television shows that are quote unquote reality TV go to such lengths to make the environment that those conversations happen in look cozy or inviting, because context helps us bond. So I really love that you did that. That's wonderful. Tell me a little bit more then about how some of our discussion has impacted you. For instance, how is Minecraft in your family at this time?
You know what? Tyler's actually kind of stepped away from Minecraft. He, over the summer, he got really into skateboarding. And so he started watching a lot of skate videos to learn new tricks. And we would take him to the skate park all the time. So I started videoing him doing the skate tricks. And then when he got home, instead of watching somebody else do the tricks, he wanted to watch his own videos, which was really fun.
That's really fun. I think I don't want to skip over the fact that his interest moved on. Sometimes when I hear parents talk about video games, they talk with the language of addiction, or they talk about it like, if I don't regulate it now, that's all he'll ever do for the next 10 years. It's interesting to see that a child's interest in something like Minecraft could fluctuate. Did you think about that or notice that a bit?
Yeah, and actually, our conversation was a little offline last time about Fortnite. I was having this anxiety about him trying Fortnite because I've heard so many things.
Oh, like that's so right. Addicting.
So we went ahead and let him try it because he had a good friend that played it and he wanted to play with him. And I was like, okay, let's try it. And after spending a weekend with the child who really likes Fortnite, Tyler decided it wasn't for him. So I was kind of holding on to all this anxiety that didn't even exist in real life. And once I let him try it and he was like, I don't even like that game. You know, he played it for a weekend when he was with his friend and then he moved on again. So
isn't that something? Yeah. Isn't that something though? It also shows that the values in your family and the things that matter to you are actually being internalized. He's having the kinds of reactions that are interesting. You know, they're actually the kind you might hope you would have. I love that. There is something about giving them that opportunity to sort of peek behind the curtain that helps mm-hmm. dispel the fascination, right? It gives them a chance to actually have a genuine reaction instead of just having to like something to defy you, to protect the space, to be curious, which is what happens a lot.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Well, that's fantastic. And I know we talked about that filming of your kids doing things. So I don't want to skip over that too quickly either. I absolutely love that you filmed him doing that skateboarding. A lot of kids have found it very empowering to feel like they get to participate in this, you know, global community of sharing that's going on through YouTube. So that's fantastic. What else? Have you added any elements of surprise to your everyday life?
Yeah, I tried to do that, especially over the summer. You know, I would put things out. I remember one morning in particular, I put out these big dominoes and I just wrote a little note like, what can you do with these? ? And when I came upstairs, they were like building a house out of them, using them as blocks. And I was like, cool. You know, I didn't give them any direction, just what can you do with these? And
wow.
They came up with something.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's fantastic. So give me an overall. How are things in your world today compared to when we spoke a few months ago?
I think they're going really well. And, you know, we've started back at school again, and we found this program called OutSchool. And Tyler is a huge Harry Potter fan, and he's also really into experiments. And I found a class on there that it's a chemistry class, but it is through the lens of Harry Potter. So it's called Potions class.
And yes,
he is loving it. And I love that he's getting to use technology as a tool for learning versus just an entertainment source, which has pretty much been most of his contact with tech up until now. So he's learning how to use Zoom and he's interacting with other people online in a safe environment. So
how brilliant.
That's really exciting to add. Yeah.
That is awesome. That's exactly right. I mean, that mirrors more your own use of tech, isn't it? Doesn't it?
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I this is all good news. Are there any lingering questions that you have?
Not really. I think when we started doing more awareness of like how often we read, our little one kind of, she got upset a little bit because she doesn't read yet. I think that, so we kind of veered away from bringing more awareness around like how often we're reading because she was starting to be like, but I don't know how to read yet.
Aww.
But I think at the same time, it got her excited for when she will learn to read eventually and, you know, when she's ready to dive into that.
Absolutely. And I mean, you can take advantage of that interest already, just naming the letters and sounds and helping her sight read a few words, you know, on signs or on the refrigerator or things you write to her that you read back to her. You'll be amazed at how quickly some of those pieces of the reading life can be adopted by some kids just because their curiosity is piqued. So it sounds to me like what you've done is some of the things that were making you a little uncomfortable, especially around technology, have been dispelled by incorporating your vision, you know, your desire to use traditional old-fashioned books, have the cuddles on the couch, everybody together in a room. You've been able to integrate that while also valuing the role of technology in learning, in filming your child skateboarding, in letting your child explore a game and discover whether or not he likes it. I mean, to me, I'm just hearing this amazing balance that seems to be happening in your life. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And, you know, going back to the Japan trip too, I think it was really fun for our littlest one to see all of us kind of struggle a little bit because none of us read Japanese. So that, you know, we were all learning together when we were there and our guide would, you know, she taught us how to count in Japanese and she taught us a few of the characters. And Emmy would recognize them on signs. She's like, oh, it says big. And she got so excited.
Isn't that amazing? And you know, I love that your youngest had the experience of all these big people in her life
not knowing how to read. That's very powerful. Not knowing the language, not knowing how to communicate. We sometimes forget that that is not an innate understanding of the world around us. We can explain it, but until you live in it, experience it directly, it isn't always believable, especially to young children. So, wow, that I love that you shared that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and there they have a lot of Japanese words and then English right under it. And she could recognize the difference. She was like, oh, that's in English. I'm like, you're right. I mean, that's, you know, that's an English word.
Yes.
So she's at least getting that recognition of like, oh, I know that that's an English letter and that's a Japanese letter.
Yes, right. Perfect. Global citizens, way to go.
Yeah.
Well, Lindsay, I really appreciate you joining us on the podcast and sharing your family story. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, thank you for having me on and for all the guidance you gave me, because I feel like it's helped us so much as a family.
Wow, what a great story. I love hearing how you are taking these ideas and making meaning in your own lives. I asked you on the first episode to send us your stories, and I want to remind you to do that again. You can either direct message me in Instagram. My Instagram account is at Julie Bravewriter, or you can send it to our helpline, help@bravewriter.com. Here's our very first message, and it gave us such a thrill to receive. It comes from Jennifer, and here's what she wrote. Hi, Julie and co. I just felt that I needed to say a massive thank you to you for the most amazing episode, episode one. I cried, I laughed, I changed my ideas. I have shared similar feelings of insecurity as Tammy, and it felt like the enchantment I'm wishing for is just not happening in my school. I now feel energized to make small changes that I am sure will have a big impact on our day. Not just the efficiency of our day, but most importantly, the coziness and connection of our family throughout our day. This is going to be a listen once a season episode for me. So thank you, Julie, Tammy, and all who have worked to make this episode. Jenny, we love hearing from you. And it encourages us so much when we find out that you're able to make meaningful use of the ideas we share. So I hope you'll take encouragement from Jenny's risk of letting us know how the podcast season is working for her family, and you'll share with us too. In the meantime, I would like to thank the production company, Podcast Masters, for the sound engineering of this episode, and the Brave Writer team, Jeanette, Amy, and Beth, for their work to make this episode possible. I'm also grateful to Lindsay McCarthy and her family for opening their home and life to us. In the meantime, keep loving and learning. This is Julie Bogart from Brave Writer.